This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There is no story more important than the war in Iraq, and few issues more contentious than how the news media cover it. Starting this year, the Project for Excellence in Journalism kept track of the stories covered by newspapers, radio, television, and the Internet, and how much time or space they devoted to the war, and how they divided that up between events on the ground, the policy debate here in Washington, and stories from the home front. In a moment, we'll talk with Tom Rosensteel, the director of the project, about what they found, and a bit later in the program, we'll hear from two people who make decisions about Iraq war coverage every day, Rick Kaplan of CBS News and Marjorie Miller of the Los Angeles Times. If you have questions about what gets covered, what doesn't, and why, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, the pitcher who threw the record-breaking home run ball to Hank Aaron on the notoriety facing whoever throws Barry Bonds number 756 and your emails. But first, covering Iraq. Tom Rosensteel is the director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism, which is based here in Washington and funded by the Pew Charitable Trusts. He joins us here in Studio 3. Nice to have you back on the program, Tom.
Thanks, Neil.
And tell us, this study found that the news media certainly agrees there is no more important story than the war in Iraq.
It dominated the coverage most of the year. It's by far the number one story overall. In the first 3 months of the year, roughly 25%, a little less than 25% of the news haul, as we measure it, which is 48 different news outlets, were made up of the various Iraq storylines. But that's dropped a lot in the last 3 months, in the second quarter of the year. We haven't quite finished up the numbers and haven't released them, but there's been a significant drop in the coverage of Iraq, and it's mainly been because the policy debate in Washington has been covered about half as much in the last 3 months, or the most recent 3 months, as it was in the first 3 months of the year.
So a large percentage of that coverage of the war in Iraq was coverage from Washington, D.C., about the policy debate.
Oh, almost two-thirds of the coverage in the first quarter of the year was really a Washington story, not coverage of the war per se, but the argument over what should we be doing in Iraq. And that's dropped by about half in the second 3 months. The coverage on the events on the ground in Iraq has remained about the same through the year. And then the coverage of the home front, or what's going on with veterans and their families, that's dropped. It was never huge, but that's dropped also by almost half in the second part of the year.
You also broke down the coverage that was based on events on the ground inside Iraq and found that most of it was about either American soldiers or about American policy in Iraq, not about Iraqis, in other words.
Yes, and I think that there's a variety of reasons potentially for that. I mean, it's difficult for journalists to get around in Iraq. There's the natural interest that Americans have in American soldiers. And there was also, I think, a sense of what you might consider the master narrative, which is how are things going? How safe is it for our soldiers? If the primary story was the policy debate, one of the answers to the question was, what are our soldiers seeing there? There's also security issues about how is it safe for American journalists to go out in the field when you're not with American soldiers. You may be relying on Iraqi staff to do your news gathering for you on television. That presents particular problems. If you really want to have a camera, you may need to be with American troops to some extent. I'm sure Rick can speak to that. I have the sense that in the last month or so, that there's been a change in the storyline from Iraq itself, away from the daily bombings and violence involving American troops and Iraqi civilians, to the political situation in the Maliki government itself and the defections there. That may reflect a new storyline. It may reflect where people think the policy debate is going to shift in the United States.
Because as you point out in your analysis, if people are concerned about what would happen if American troops stayed in Iraq, what would happen if they left, clearly the focus on the Iraqi government and what's happening to Iraqi institutions is crucial.
One of the challenges here is if you were one reporter sent from England to cover the United States. And people said, well, what's the situation there in the United States? This is a big country. There's a lot of things going on. Mm-hmm. And you can sort of cover one thing in a sort of consecutive way, or you can bounce around and tell a story that's not particularly coherent but covers a wide range of things. Covering an entire country in a situation where the events on the ground may be different in one part of the country than in another, a country that's in civil war and the state and the situation is in flux, you know, that's an enormously complicated thing to do. What's a fair way to do that is open, I think, to real debate, especially when your movement is
so restricted.
Curtailed.
It's also interesting. The analysis showed differences in how much emphasis the Iraq story got in newspapers, television, radio, and the internet. And it turned out the evening news was most devoted to the story in Iraq.
Yes, and it's interesting because where you get your news now, and when you get it, what time during the day, makes a big difference in terms of what you will learn. If you want to be following the Iraq story, the nightly TV newscasts, the network newscasts, are a much better place to go than, say, cable news or morning television news. It was a big story in newspapers, a somewhat bigger story, a somewhat smaller story online. The notion that we are all getting, that the media is a monolith, is really not true anymore.
And interestingly, though the three major television networks, or I guess the four major television networks at this point, were about the same.
Yes, that's the other thing that's quite interesting. The differences between NBC Nightly News and ABC Nightly News and CBS Nightly News are very marginal compared to the differences between ABC in the evening versus ABC in the morning. Hmm. There is a genre now called the network evening news, and those programs are, at least in terms of what they cover, pretty indistinguishable. There may be big differences in the way they cover them, in the tone or the presentation or even the quality of the reporting. We can't speak to that, but the news agenda of those programs is very similar. So kind of sub storyline here is if Katie Couric's ratings are dropping mm-hmm. or Charlie Gibson's are going up, it's not because of what they're covering. It may be other things.
And that sort of goes to another question, which is how much do people care about this? Now, your initial survey covered just what the various news media outlets were doing themselves. You've begun to ask their audience and their readers questions about what they're interested in.
Yes, our sister organization, the Pew Research Center for the People in the Press, has been tracking how do people react to what they're getting from the press, from the media. And what they find is that people are enormously interested in the Iraq story. It's funny because some critics of the media have said, particularly of the presidential campaign, have said, you know, this is settled. The majority of Americans are opposed to our policy in Iraq. They want a change. We shouldn't be only focusing on this, particularly in the context of what the presidential candidates might do, particularly since the Democrats all have very similar positions on it. The Republicans all have fairly similar positions to each other. You know, let's cover other things, healthcare and the rest. And the reality is that Americans are following this coverage very closely. Yes, the storyline isn't changing dramatically necessarily through the course of the year. Yes, it may be a very Washington-centric kind of coverage. It may be a very U.S.-centric kind of coverage, even in Iraq. But Americans are quite interested. They are following the story closely.
And so there's no burnout, per se, at least in terms of the news audience.
And it's why that might be the case when we've already had an election that has been dealt with this in the midterms, I think is a little hard to say. One possibility is that we know that the majority of Americans, even Republicans, are opposed to the president's policies, and yet the president is fairly stubborn in persisting with the policies that he wants to pursue. And that tension may be what is maintaining interest.
Mm-hmm. So if just to sum up, if coverage of the Iraq war issue, broadly speaking, is less in the last 3 months than it was in the first 3 months of the year, that is because there's been less coverage of the policy debate here in Washington, D.C.
Yes, and my hunch, and I need to go back and look at the timing, but my hunch is that we will see that drop-off occurred when the Democratic-led Congress voted to continue funding the war but did not impose timetables. And once that debate ended, the coverage subsided. In a sense, what we've had is an overlay of all of our Washington and congressional coverage focused particularly on Iraq. And when that vote occurred, Congress moved to a debate about immigration, and lo and behold, what we saw was a tripling in the amount of coverage about the immigration debate in America, which almost makes up for not all, but a lot of the drop in the coverage of Iraq.
And you could almost predict that come September, when General Petraeus is due before Congress to present his assessment of the first phases of the so-called surge, coverage will again spike, but again based here in Washington.
Yeah, and one of the things that we question is has the White House so dampened expectations of what we'll learn in September that story will essentially be less than expected.
Let's not cover news of the future, at least not yet. Tom Rosenstiel is still covering news of the present and the past. We're going to be having two people who make decisions about Iraq war coverage every day joining us in just a moment. That's Rick Kaplan of the CBS Evening News, the executive producer of that program, and Marjorie Miller, who's the foreign editor of the Los Angeles Times. These are two of the most prominent and most respected institutions in their various media in the country. Is that fair?
Yes, I think that's absolutely fair. You know, one of the things that's interesting to note also in the terms of the press coverage is that although we've had this big explosion in media, the number of institutions that actually have reporters on the ground on a regular basis in these foreign stories, and particularly places like Iraq, where it's very expensive and dangerous to cover the news, that universe of news organizations hasn't grown a lot. There are only really three general interest newspapers in the United States left that have a full complement of foreign bureaus. That's the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Los Angeles Times. The Wall Street Journal does as well, but that's a financial newspaper. Hmm. And then when you get to television institutions, you're talking about the three networks primarily and the three cable networks.
Tom Rosenstiel of the Project for Excellence in Journalism, we're going to ask you to stay with us, and then we're going to be joined in just a moment by Marjorie Miller and by Rick Kaplan. If you'd like to join the conversation about what gets covered in Iraq and why, 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Iraq is the top news story for more than 4 years now. We just talked about the amount of time various news outlets spend reporting on Iraq, what kinds of stories they cover, and from where they cover it. Now we want to turn to the news organizations themselves, how and why editors and producers make coverage decisions. If you have questions about what gets covered and why, what doesn't and why, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Still with us is Tom Rosenstiel of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. And joining us now is Rick Kaplan, executive producer of the CBS Evening News with Katie Couric. He joins us from the CBS Broadcast Center in New York City. Nice to have you on the program today.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Thanks for having me. Also, hi, Tom.
Hi, Rick.
Also with us is Marjorie Miller, editor of the Foreign Desk at the Los Angeles Times. She joins us from a studio in downtown Los Angeles. And nice to have you on Talk of the Nation as well.
Thank you.
And Rick Kaplan, let me begin with you. What's the biggest challenge of reporting the war now? Is it getting harder as the violence continues?
Well, it's always been difficult to cover the war because we don't have a great deal of access, as Tom has spoken about. But there's also, you know, when coverage tends to wane a bit, like it has now, a lot of it has to do with when we think the Congress is doing something that is about the war and when we think the Congress is doing something that is about politics. And we tend to lean away from it. You know, once they voted funding for the war but didn't set a date, all the shenanigans that went on pretty much were really about just trying to stick it to the other party and, you know, bringing in the cots and doing all that kind of stuff. And I tend to minimize coverage at that point. When you're talking about on the ground, actually, this has been a quiet month. It was supposed to be the bloodiest month, but I believe that fewer American soldiers, thank God, have been killed this month than in times past, and fewer Iraqi civilians have been killed as well. So it's been relatively a quieter month. And most of the time, what governs our coverage is what we can get video of, what we've gotten correspondents out to do. And that's really what controls how much gets on the air.
And would you agree with the analysis that much of the coverage, even from on the ground in Iraq, is about American soldiers and American policies, as opposed to being about Iraqis and Iraqi institutions?
Well, that actually wouldn't hold true for us in this last month. We did a couple of pieces that dealt with the number of Iraqi casualties in the course of this war. We've done a lot of stories. We did it must have been four or five parts on this orphanage, and I guess it was about American soldiers who saved these Iraqi orphans, but it was a great deal about the orphanage and the orphans themselves and what's going to come of them. You try to do as best you can. Clearly, we're American-centric because, frankly, I'm not sure anybody goes out, if you're an American journalist, I'm not sure you really go out with anybody but American soldiers, because that's the safest way to cover the war. And so you're going to be American-centric at that point, right from the get-go.
Marjorie Miller, let me ask you the same point. Your reporters, of course, don't have the additional burden of television cameras and microphones.
Right. Thank goodness. We have a little bit more mobility, a little bit more freedom than television. I would go back to what Tom called the master story.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the master story last year was the outbreak of civil war in Iraq. It became full-fledged civil war, and we covered that day in and day out. This year, the master story is really about U.S. policy and the surge and the benchmarks that the president laid out, and whether this, what many perceive to be last chance for U.S. policy in Iraq, will work. And so I think there is a tendency this year to look a little bit more at American soldiers. We have more there today than at any other time, over 160,000. And to look at whether the U.S. identified benchmarks, whether it's oil legislation or the integration of Sunnis into the government, whether those things are working.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a little bit more focus this year on the American side of the story.
And let me ask you, it's a frequently aired criticism is that there's simply just not enough coverage of Iraq. Do you hear that, and how do you respond to it?
Well, you can never do enough because, as you said, it's a huge, diverse, complicated country, and we have limited mobility. But I don't think it's as bad as that. I think, first of all, we have a lot of Iraqis working for us, and we've let them write a lot of first-person mm-hmm. pieces for us. We've encouraged that. And we try to do a balance of military stories, political stories, human interest stories, media about the Iraqi media, about Iraqi militia, Iraqi political parties, and daily life in a country with blistering heat and not enough electricity. So I like to think that we've struck the right balance, but maybe we don't always get it right.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. And again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Armando. Armando's calling us from Fayetteville in North Carolina.
Yes, thanks. I used to be a journalist and affiliate correspondent in D.C., and I covered the master story. And I am surprised now that I live here in Fayetteville, which is home to Fort Bragg, how different the story seems when I live and work side by side with soldiers and their families. I mean, I eat where they eat, I shop where they shop, and the story on this side of the ocean is a lot different. I don't see there's hardly any coverage of what the impact is on soldiers when their missions get extended, when reserves get called again and again, the impact on families, on domestic violence. The Pentagon did a report not too long ago. I mean, it is just astounding to me, all of the stories that are here on this side that just don't get covered.
This would be Tom Rosenstiel, home front stories?
Yes, it's what we call, for lack of a better term, call the home front stories. And, there wasn't much of it in the first quarter of the year, and then suddenly we had the exposés about conditions at
Walter Reed
Hospital.
In the Washington Post.
Washington again, but I mean,
right.
Here
and then it, and then, and once that subsided, as your caller said, the coverage subsided. I'm sorry.
And let me just turn to our editors and ask Marjorie Miller. This is not your department. You're the foreign editor. You're not the national editor. But would you agree that the perception of Armando's is accurate?
Oh, you know, when you lump together all of the media, it's very hard to know how these stories surface and whether they make an impact. It's funny because just yesterday I was saying to our national editor that I thought we had done a much better job this year of covering the home front. And I think we launched a periodic series recently on three Marines who are just joining up now. And we've done an awful lot of coverage of websites for families of soldiers and returning soldiers, but maybe it's not enough. You know, maybe it's never enough.
And Rick Kaplan, how would you respond to Armando's comments?
Well, I'm going to echo what Marjorie said. I mean, it really is never enough, although I would point out that beginning tomorrow, a two-part series on the returning Minnesota National Guard, the longest-serving group, and how they've been assimilating into civilian life begins on our air. We've tried to do the home front. You can never really do it enough. I'll tell you, and I think that Marjorie and Tom would both agree, we haven't paid enough attention, perhaps, and Congress hasn't paid enough attention, perhaps, on how our military folks are treated when they do get back. You know, it's one of the stories that's going to continue long after this war is that even when they budgeted what this war would cost, they never assumed that so many soldiers would be miraculously, thank God, saved on the battlefield by doctors, that they would have this enormous influx of wounded and maimed young people and how they'd have to take care of them. And they just were not ready for any of that. I think there's never enough coverage of the home front, but there's, you know, we do the best we can, and I'm always willing to say I wish we could do more.
I would add,
but I said we have this two-part series tomorrow. We'll just get the plug in.
Tom Rosenstein?
I would add two quick things. Our data suggests that newspapers and network evening news cover this subject more than any other media. And I would also say that one of the challenges here is that this is a war that the country has tried to conduct with as minimal an impact on the home front relative to other wars as possible, I think, because the Pentagon felt that that was a way that to sustain public support. And that makes it more of a challenge for the media to cover.
Yeah, and I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, there are great examples, actually, of the administration really hampering our ability to cover certain domestic stories in this because they – It's not the prettiest of stories, and it's not the side that they particularly want out, and so it just makes it more difficult. But
yeah,
I'll
but
leave it there.
Marjorie Miller, to some degree, isn't Armando talking about sort of the sense that within the active duty military, the reserves and the National Guard, a very small fragment of our population, a very small group of Americans, feel as if they're being asked to carry an undue burden here?
Hey, you should ask their families that. I mean, there are businesses that are going out of business here because you've got half of Fort, almost all of Fort Bragg is deployed.
Yeah.
In small towns. I was in a small town called Red Springs with a population of under 2,000 people, and 300 reservists from the Red Springs area were sent to Iraq to defuse bombs, of all things. I mean, one of the most dangerous missions of all. I mean, there are a lot of stories here, a lot of stories.
Armando, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
All right.
Here's an email from Kate in Chicago. I found documentary films some of the most elucidating pieces of media on the subject of Iraq, in particular films like Iraq in Fragments, My Country, My Country. By focusing on Iraqis have given me a greater understanding of the situation and the people's lives and perspectives. I wonder if typical news methodologies of focusing on current events such as bombings and political maneuvers really give the most developed and accurate perspective to Americans. And I guess, Rick Kaplan, you're the medium closest to that.
Well, we spend a great deal of time working with, we have a lot of Iraqis working for us, and I think we're very conscious, and you've seen some extraordinary pieces on 60 Minutes and on the evening news that deal with Iraqi life and Iraqis trying to make their way. I'm not sure what the, it's, you know, we're not a documentary, so we're not going to be doing an hour on it any night, but I think we try very hard to give you a sense of how, what Iraqis are dealing with and how horrible the situation is for all of them.
Have you seen those pictures? Do you watch those documentaries?
Some, not that many. There's a similarity between them that you kind of see a couple and you've seen them all.
Hmm. All right, let's get another caller on the line. This is Stumpy. Stumpy with us from Fort Leavenworth in Kansas.
Hello. I've just come back from a deployment in Baghdad where I worked with a lot of people from the outlets you've been discussing. I know what a horrible life they have living in a bunker, and it means that some of the great ones, like Borzu from the L.A. Times, John Burns from the New York Times, are leaving. How do you get good reporters to stay? How do you get reporters to be willing to go over there and put up with the fact that they can't practice their craft as they usually do?
Marjorie Miller, I thought I heard the Los Angeles Times mentioned in there.
Right. Well, that's been one of the biggest challenges of covering the war, is keeping the war covered. We're on our third generation, I think, of reporters there. A normal foreign tour in another country is 3, 4, even 5 years. In Iraq, you know, if we can keep someone there 1.5 to 2 years, that's a long time, because it's grueling. It's absolutely grueling. They're in 6 weeks and out 2 or 3 weeks, and their mobility is very restricted. The tension is obviously very high. We do live in our own bunker. We don't live in the green zone, but we live in our own kind of bunker with walls and sandbags and razor wire and three checkpoints getting in and out. And when they go out in armored cars, and they have a chase car with security guards and walkie-talkies, and they worry about getting kidnapped. They worry about getting caught like everyone else in a bomb or a militia checkpoint.
And
they do get out.
Bombed. Our headquarters do get bombed.
And our offices
have to move.
Get bombed.
Yeah.
We're talking with Marjorie Miller of the Los Angeles Times and Rick Kaplan, executive producer of the CBS Evening News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And, of course, I should mention Tom Rosenstiel of the Project for Excellence in Journalism is here with us. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Skip. Skip calling us from Kansas City in Missouri.
Hi, how you doing today?
All right.
I'm just curious as to why we don't see more stories about the things that actually build the inner city, you know, the restoration of the water lines and the restoration of the power lines, and what kind of stories are behind, you know, restoring those services? I mean, we talk about security, but what are they doing to bring those stories to the forefront? I mean, they were pretty well disrupted at the beginning of the war, and here we are, you know, 6 years later or 5 years later,
Are you under the impression life is better?
Kind of semblance of order.
Skip, you couldn't hear. Rick Kaplan was asking you, are you under the impression that life is better, that there is more electricity, more water now?
No, but I'm wondering why we aren't seeing stories as to what is behind those things not being restored.
Okay. Rick Kaplan?
I mean, I know we have a security problem over there,
yep.
But there are some areas that are.
I believe it's still holding. I think Baghdad is now in its 8th day without water. And Alan Pizia did a report for us on being without water and what they're trying to do to get around it. There is electricity still sporadic, lucky if they get an hour or two a day. What's gone on there, and some reporting that you'll start seeing coming out in papers and television as well, is they've gone away from these larger programs. You know, we're going to rebuild an hydraulic plant or an electric plant. We're going to stop these giant projects because those projects tended to get bogged down, filled with graft and the rest. And they're going to a lot of smaller projects. So that what you start to see happening is that something worked well for a very small neighborhood, and the military is trying to go in that direction and go away from the larger projects. Mm-hmm. That obviously takes more time, but it seems to be working better than the larger projects did. Most of the larger projects that I can think of have really been mired in either graft or they just don't work, or, you know, the people are living a horrific existence.
And Marjorie Miller, we just have a few seconds before we have to take a break, but would you agree broadly with what Rick Kaplan just said? And do you consciously set out to do reconstruction stories?
From time to time we do, especially when there's a major emphasis, for example, on Sadr City. We'll take a look at whether it's successful or not. But I would say we have actually moved more towards the political stories. We've let the benchmarks guide our coverage perhaps a little bit too much, and we've been looking at the legislature and the military front, and maybe we have looked a little bit less at services, but the bottom line is they're not improved.
That's Marjorie Miller, foreign editor at the Los Angeles Times. Also with us, Rick Kaplan, executive producer of the CBS Evening News, and Tom Rosensteel of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. We'll talk more with them about how the media covers Iraq in a moment. Plus, the pitcher who gave up the record-breaking home run to Hank Aaron sympathizes with the as-yet unidentified person who will do the same for Barry Bonds. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're continuing our conversation about the media and Iraq and some of the decisions that go into coverage of the war. Our guests are Tom Rosensteel, of the director of the Project for Excellence in Journalism, Rick Kaplan, executive producer of the CBS Evening News, and Marjorie Miller, foreign desk editor for the Los Angeles Times Foreign Bureau.
I have a question for Marjorie and Rick, if I might, Neil. I'm curious whether you have a sense that your ability to get embedded with U.S. Services or to get access to them has been politicized at all over time, whether they were viewing a reporter's coverage to see if it's favorable or not, to examine the tone of it before they decide whether to give people access to them.
Marjorie Miller?
No, I don't have that sense that we've been limited by anything we've written. In fact, access to embeds has been quite good for us, for all of our reporters.
And what about you, Rick Kaplan?
Same. I don't see any of that at all. Our reporters have, no matter what they filed, have been welcomed into the program, and we've not had any problems with embeds at all.
Okay. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Kelly. Kelly with us from San Antonio in Texas.
Hi. My question is for all of you. I have a question. I'm a current service member in the Army, and I served 2 years in Guantanamo, and I lost a lot of faith in the journalism after meeting the media and then later seeing their stories come out a week later. Just like in Iraq, I'd like to know why I'm not seen, and I'm not privy to access to, like, what is actually going on, like the good things that are coming out of us being over there, what my comrades have accomplished being over there, because I hear stories from soldiers when I get back in decompression training, you know, all these great stories of what they've done, but never would I see that on the, you know, in the news, and I'd just like to know why, and because I saw it firsthand in Guantanamo, and I'm losing faith in the stories, yet I'm following very closely.
Rick Kaplan, this is a persistent criticism.
Yeah, it really is, and I'm very curious as to what good stories she saw in Guantanamo. But the in terms of the good stories over in Iraq, there's a whole list of them that the LA Times and that Marjorie and I could both trot out. But, you know, really it comes down to balance. The truth of it is that you can be handing out soccer balls on a Thursday afternoon and isn't it great and the kids will play in the street, and the rest of the 6 days of the week they're all going to be pinned down and, you know, 50 people will have been killed in a car bomb. And is it really fair to run, you know, to do the soccer balls on Thursday and when the neighborhood itself is not inhabitable? I mean, there's a lot. Our soldiers are doing an extraordinary job and they're trying really hard to make this policy work, and the surge, there are some actually bright spots that are starting to come out, and I think you're starting to see a trend of reporting that says, almost surprisingly, that some of this surge is working. But I think on balance, there's not a lot of great things to report in terms of overall accomplishments that stick.
Tom Rosensteel, quickly, are you seeing evidence of that kind of reporting that Rick Kaplan was just talking about, reports that suggest the surge may be working?
Yes, I do. I mean, we don't have data on this because it's very recent, but I think anecdotally that we are beginning to see a sense that And as Rick said, against expectations that the surge may be having an effect. And I also think that it's possible that the confidence in Petraeus is reflected in that storyline as well.
General David Petraeus, of course. Thanks very much for the call, Kelly.
Thank you.
And let's see if we get one last caller in, and this will be Chris. Chris with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi. My question is a home front question, and it's about why there isn't more coverage of the anti-war movement or the peace movement. Let me just give you two quick examples. There was a major demonstration in New York City, which was drew people from all over the country, several hundred thousand people, and the Times put it on the metro section. And NPR, when it covers demonstrations of that scale, regularly reports that there were thousands of demonstrators, not even lowballing it down to 10,000, tens of thousands, you know, which would be a conservative kind of estimate, but down to thousands, so really misrepresenting the order of magnitude of the opposition to the war and people acting out about it.
Mm-hmm.
We get the poll reports, but not coverage of the movement. And I'd like to understand more about why that is, and particularly maybe whether it's because the media, you know, there was a sort of phase when you were sort of apologizing for having missed the boat on the lies that got us into the war in the first place. But, you know, I wonder if it's, you know, there's a certain kind of unwillingness to write.
Again, Marjorie Miller, you're not the national editor, so I'll ask this of Rick Kaplan.
Oh, great. The I think we try very hard to cover those who are opposed to the war. I'll tell you, I'm not sure how much we've done on the anti-war movement per se, but I think in all the polling and in all of the pieces that have been dealing with American public opinion, you see an enormous anti-war attitude. So perhaps this anti-war movement is enormous in the country.
There are people actually acting on that. Hmm. It's part of the politics of it. You know, the last demo we had here in Portland, our congressman, Earl Blumenauer, was there. Our local media covered the story, but there were demos all over the country. It was a national story.
I can't remember.
Why doesn't it get covered as a national story, and why does it just get stuck on the local
metro page? Yeah.
Well, I don't have a metro page, as you well know, but that Marjorie does. But
Portland.
Well, let me ask Marjorie.
But I don't. You know, I don't remember a series of anti-war demonstrations Monday through Friday, which is kind of my beat.
Mm.
So I apologize to your listener.
Tom Rosenstiel?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are two things. First of all, I don't think that the media feels guilty over the run-up to the war. If you look back, frankly, the Democratic Party decided to support the war. The American public was very supportive of the war. And if you go through history, when a country runs toward war and the war policies are popular, the media rarely becomes a kind of surrogate opposition to that. I can't think of any precedent where that occurs. And the whole question of weapons of mass destruction and should we have known about that is actually much more complicated than the sort of the revisionism on that. As far as an anti-war movement, what we have today does not come close to what we had when we had a draft during Vietnam. And I think that's the comparison that's in the media's mind.
Okay. I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, but I wanted to thank you all for your time. That last voice, Tom Rosenstiel of the Project for Excellence in Journalism. Our thanks, too, to Rick Kaplan, executive producer of the CBS Evening News with Katie Kirk. Thanks very much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Marjorie Miller, Los Angeles Times foreign editor, and we appreciate your taking the time out to speak with us as well.
Thank you very much.
And when we come back, we'll be talking with Al Downing.